Our next speaker this morning is Ray Bryant, and he'll be speaking about some work with phosphorus sorption here in the Mid-Atlantic.
This presentation was put together by Loretta Collins from University of Maryland. She's working on a master's degree there, but she was unable to attend the meetings for lack of funding. And so she's working on a project that's led by Arthur Allen from University of Maryland Eastern Shore and myself. And so I'm giving the presentation for her today. I hope I can do her justice. She did prepare the slides, however. This opening slide shows the Eastern Shore and a full ditch at a condition there's no runoff, so the water table is right up near the surface, particularly in the winter and the spring. You can have those kind of conditions. So this is on the Delmarva Peninsula, the eastern shore of Chesapeake Bay. High poultry production, corn, soybean, cover crop rotation, a lot of excess phosphorus for several decades, and of course that leads to eutrophication. So what Loretta is going to present today is the effects of gypsum application on water extractable phosphorus, and this is FGD gypsum. Going to look at characteristics in P sorption and maximum sorption in these soils related to gypsum application. And then there's some general issues in Maryland related to the phosphorus index and nutrient application regulations. She's going to look at the degree of P saturation in these soils and the way that it's calculated and any effects of gypsum on that, since P saturation has been proposed as one measure that you might regulate phosphorus additions on. And then looking at soil test phosphorus versus oxalate extraction as a means of getting at this P saturation. So that's a general overview. Here's her site, Crisfield, Maryland, very close to the Chesapeake Bay. And here's her treatments with 5 milligrams per hectare, 10, 15, and the D transect is the control with zero FGD gypsum. We don't have a lot of gypsum, or very little at all, gypsum application in Maryland. So we didn't have any rate guidelines to go by, so we put on these three different trials. You see the chicken houses right next to the field there in the lower left of this picture. The soil is a Falsington. It's a typic Indo-Aqualt, so it's a wet altosoil. Fine loamy in the subsoil, breaking to loamy sands and sands below about a meter, and the surface is sandy loam or loam. So looking at the water extractable phosphorus, of course, that's mainly a concern with lateral groundwater flow to the ditch, but that water table can be in contact with the surface horizon and can pick up considerable phosphorus. And so studies have shown that water extractable phosphorus can be controlled by precipitation with pH, generally at your higher pH values. And precipitation with aluminum or iron is predominant in acidic soils. The average pH at this site is 5.2, and we probably should have done a better job of selecting our field site because we do have soils in the area where pH is high, and they're looking for sources of calcium where they don't want to add additional lime and make the soil too high in pH. But this condition we're talking about is relatively low, 5.2. It's very high malic 3 values. They require nutrient management at a value of 150 malic 3 phosphorus, and we're at 384, so more than double the limit. So there's a relationship between exchangeable calcium and water exchangeable phosphorus. The relationship is not real strong in terms of the R squared. However, you may see as much as a 50% reduction at our highest rates of calcium addition. And there's a tighter relationship with the sulfur, but of course I think the water extractable phosphorus is more related to the calcium content in the soil. So by depth, 1 year after application, we did a 0 to 5 centimeter analysis and a 5 to 15. And looking first at the red bars with the 5 to 15, you see a steady decline in water extractable phosphorus across all three rates compared to the control. But then looking at the green lines, we had our strongest effects at the 10 and 15. These are megagrams per hectare. And then Loretta took, that was a single sampling 1 year after. Loretta was also taking some analyses on cores that were taken at some infiltrometer sites where she was looking at effects on physical characteristics, which I'm not going to talk about today. But it saw something similar. Now, these are cores that are integrated from 0 to 15 centimeters, so it's a little different. But she appears to see that the effects are wearing off after about 16 months after application. So looking at P-sorption, she did Langmuir isotherms on these and determined that the maximum sorption of these soils appear to be slightly affected by gypsum. And so she's asking the question, well, why did we see that effect? You can look at your total P-sorption capacity related to the sorption max plus the P-oxalate extractable and rearrange that equation to come up with an equation for sorption max. And so we know that the P-sorption capacity or the total P-sorption capacity is moderately related to aluminum and iron oxalate extractable. But is calcium playing a role, even in an acidic soil? So one of two things must be happening. You can have a larger P-oxalate extractable, and that will result in a smaller soil maximum sorption, or other way around, you might get a smaller P-sorption capacity would give you a smaller maximum sorption. And so we see that the there is a relationship between aluminum and iron oxalate and the P-sorption capacity. And then, but then when we look down at the, I have to use my glasses here. Excuse me. Over time, though, and through all three samplings, we didn't see much effect on the P-oxalate extractable. However, when you look at iron, there again, no real significant trend, but perhaps a trend in what's happening with oxalate extractable aluminum. So this is looking at aluminum proportion, and it seems to be dropping down. The aluminum oxalate extractable after the gypsum is applied. Is pH a factor? Well, not really. It's pretty inconsistent data on the effects on pH. So that leaves us with a question, is there a reaction between aluminum and sulfate? Some of the stuff that was being presented in the previous presentation that may explain this decline in oxalate extractable aluminum. Our previous speaker talked about activity, not so much total extractable, so the jury is still out on that. So she used these soils to look at degree of P saturation and raised the issue of alpha values when you calculate degree of P saturation using the oxalate extraction method. And in the data, the 0.5 is arbitrarily used, well, I wouldn't say arbitrarily, it's based on a Dutch study that showed that's your average value for alpha. But Sims reported that in mid-Atlantic soils, that alpha value can range from 0.3 to 0.7 on coastal plain soils. So in her range of soil conditions, we found that they did in fact range. When she calculated the alpha values for each soil, they range from 0.3 to 0.8, but the mean is right around 0.5. There's a 10% difference between degree of P saturation if you use 0.5 versus the calculated, and that you can underestimate the degree of P saturation about 39% of the time if you use the 0.5 value out of the literature. The 25% of degree P saturation is generally considered the threshold for P loss, and in our soils, the mean degree P sorption was 74%, so you're well over what's considered a threshold there. And there was no observed effect of FGD gypsum application on the degree of P-sorption calculation. So another consideration as Maryland moves forward and considers revision of their P-index is whether or not you can use Malik 3 data to get at this P-saturation. And that's because Malik 3 data is more readily available. It's an easier test than the oxalate extraction. And so studies have suggested that you might be able to use Malik 3 to get at this P-saturation and not have to require an oxalate extractable method. So it would look something like this. You just run your Malik 3P divided by Malik 3 aluminum plus iron. And so previous research has shown a strong relationship. That's Sims again, working in Delaware on coastal plain soils. So in her database, showed a pretty good relationship with extractable aluminum, a weaker relationship, but a relationship with phosphorus, and no relationship with iron. And then if you just do the comparison of the P saturation ratio by Malik 3 versus the oxalate extraction method, then there is a relationship. It's somewhat weak, R squared 0.45, but there is a relationship there. So, conclusions. Water extractable P decreased from 7 up to 48% 1 year after FGD gypsum application, but the effects seem to be dissipating after the first year. Maybe by year two, you might have lost the effects on water extractable P. The alpha values are comparable to a range of values previously reported. There is some inaccuracy in using a book value of alpha equal 0.5. It skews the DPS calculations and can cause some underestimation of degree of P saturation in some cases. And then the proportion of aluminum oxalate decreased in FGD gypsum treated soils, and that potentially affects the predicted sorption max. Again, maybe unclear how long that effect might persist. And then there was a moderate relationship between Malik 3 P sorption ratio and the oxalate extractable degree of P sorption. And then generally the data backs up previous research on these relationships between different P indicators. Again, I remind you, we're working with a low pH soil here of 5.4. And situation might be different if we were working up on some of these soils that do exist in the area where pH is in the high sixes. So Loretta would like to thank her advisory committee, Gary Felton, Brian Needleman, and Robert Hill from University of Maryland. And these are the project associates, University of Maryland Eastern Shore, leading this project in cooperation with USDA Ag Research Service, Somerset County Soil Conservation District, Constellation Power at the time when we started, now Raven Power out of Baltimore, and funded by a USDA Conservation Innovation Grant. There's Loretta Collins' contact information. I urge you to contact her directly if you have some questions, but I'll try to answer questions in her absence. So, thank you. Arthur, do we have time?
At the high rate of FGD gypsum application, did she run any tests to determine if magnesium deficiency occurred, or was that not part of this?
She hasn't, to my knowledge, she hasn't run any tests on whether or not that induced any magnesium deficiency. I haven't heard any anecdotal evidence of magnesium efficiency being induced by the high rate, say in talking with a farmer.